We're going to go right out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. He covers the Cavaliers and does a tremendous job at it at that. For Cleveland.com, we always appreciate him stopping by, especially when I'm on and have a chance to bring him on with me. Ethan Sands of Cleveland.com joining the show. Ethan, how has your summer been so far, my man?
Summer's been great, Spence. How about yours?
It's been pretty good. I mean, these last couple of days have been sort of brutally hot, but it was weird, man. Like, we went from it was cold all those days and sort of still like fall weather, and then it was like there was no in between. It was either like really cold or it just gets really hot. And it's kind of I don't like that. I wanted like to ease myself in, I guess. But
yeah, I think that's fair. I was very disappointed in the amount of rain that we have gotten over the last couple of days. But I'm glad if it has to be hot, I'm glad there's no rain coming with it. So that's the positive I'm going to take away from it.
So, Ethan, as we think about what the future sort of holds for the Cavs, as we look back at last night in Game 7 of the NBA Finals, the Tyrese Halliburton injury and really the three big injuries in the Eastern Conference, all Achilles ruptures for star players that unfolded, sort of have ripple effects that will, you know, stretch into next season in terms of, you know, what the Eastern Conference looks like, the landscape of it, and who has the best chance to emerge from this conference as a whole. Do any of these injuries change the way that you think the Cavaliers maybe approach the offseason in terms of, do they look at it and say, you know what, window's wide open, we feel really good about our team, and if we just get some injury luck, maybe we can stay the same and come out of this Eastern Conference? Or does it maybe force the issue more that they do need to push the chips into the center of the table?
I think this is kind of what the Cavs might have needed to have that realization, Spence, of the importance not only of this offseason, but of this upcoming year. Because we've talked about it throughout the summer, the player option coming up with Donovan Mitchell in two seasons, and obviously understanding that this is a team that felt like if they would have gotten past the Indiana Pacers, that they would have had a decent run into the postseason and could have been in the NBA Finals themselves. So seeing this as an opportunity, obviously Boston's going to be without Jason Tatum. Tyrese Halliburton is going to be out for the Indiana Pacers. And the Milwaukee Bucks are going to be without Damian Lillard as well. I think it's important that the Cavs take this next season as seriously as possible with the opportunity that it's going to be an NBA Finals or bust season. With all of the wide openness of the Eastern Conference, this has to be the year that the Cavs make a push past the Eastern Conference semifinals, past the Eastern Conference finals, and to the NBA Finals. It might be the best chance that they've had in the entire franchise's history outside of when LeBron James was on the roster.
So along those lines, we saw the reporting from Shyam Charania over the weekend about the Kevin Durant trade, and in his story that outlined how it came to fruition that he ends up in Houston, he mentioned that the Cavaliers became this sort of wild card, I think is what he called it, candidate to land him. That was followed up today. I know Kevin O'Connor of Yahoo Sports, he mentioned in his podcast that Darius Garland would have been sort of the focal point of a Cavs package for Kevin Durant. How revelatory is that in terms of the Cavs' mindset right now and how they're approaching this offseason, and what should that mean for what could unfold for this team coming down the pike here when free agency really opens up?
I think it was more, as it was mentioned, a wild card thing, right? Throwing their hat in the ring, seeing what was available, what was possible for Darius Garland in that option, and if Kevin Durant would have been able to come to Cleveland. But obviously, Darius Garland is somebody that's been on the trade market for what seems like the entire summer, but obviously after having to undergo surgery, the question then unfolds with Cleveland and trying to figure out whether or not it would be worth it to trade him away, and if other teams would try and feel like he wouldn't be as valuable, especially if he's not coming into the season fully healthy. So I think it's interesting to think about why Houston might have rejected an offer that the Cavs would have given them, including Darius Garland, especially when they might be in the need for a point guard like Darius Garland, even though that's not exactly what you might be getting next year. So I do think that the Kevin Durant and Darius Garland trade rumor is interesting, but I still think that I'm the biggest believer that the Cavs need to run it back with the core four for one more season. And the fact is that I think they need to get better around the margins, because in this past playoffs, it didn't feel like the Cavs were comfortable or confident handing over the keys to anybody else on the team other than the starting lineup to help them get to the next level, right? We talk about Ty Jerome, DeAndre Hunter, Sam Merrill, Dean Wade, Isaac Okoro. Those guys simply were not good enough, and that strained Donovan Mitchell as it has over the last couple of years. So I think the biggest change that needs to happen is going to happen on the bench.
It's interesting you say that. So as you talk about winning in the margins and maybe not breaking up the core four, I guess what does that look like? How much of that is influenced by just coaching and Kenny Atkinson being in year two, getting a chance to work with these guys even more than he did last year? The thing that Kobe Altman points to, how much of that is development from Evan Mobley? And how much of that is maybe other trades that the team could make or other moves that the team could make that don't involve the core four, at least from your perspective?
I think it's a mixture of both, right? Because Kenny Atkinson was, as we know, traveling across the world last year as part of Team France, the French national team, during the Olympics. So he didn't have the full summer to be with his guys. Obviously, he also got hired later into the summer. But I feel like Kenny Atkinson being able to know his players, get them acclimated, is huge. Obviously, getting more assets when it comes to the coaching staff as well during this tumultuous offseason when it came to the coaching staff is going to be important. But Kenny Atkinson just getting the time to have his players at his disposal and knowing that they're already trying to get the work in. Evan Mobley, Donovan Mitchell have already been seen in the gyms and all those things. And Evan Mobley is, as you mentioned, the biggest piece. But I think it's also external, right? There have been rumors and sources saying that Isaac Okoro is on the market. Dean Wade is on the market for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Obviously, Isaac Okoro's contract is more helpful for the Cavs that they were able to dump that because of what that would mean for the luxury tax, what that would mean for the second apron, all those things. And I think it's important because even if the Cavs decide to trade Isaac Okoro and instead get not just assets but a player back, I think they have the capability of getting back a player like maybe Lonzo Ball. That would be helpful not only because Ty Jerome, Craig Porter Jr., and Darius Garland are going to be in and out of the lineup, but also understanding that Lonzo is a defensive guy as well, and that kind of and that size and that defensive acumen kind of helps the Cavs in multiple different areas that they've been lacking.
Ethan Sands, Cleveland.com, joining us here on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. A few more minutes with him here. Along the lines of the roster construction, moves that could be made, all those different things, do you think the Cavs are going to be forced to choose between keeping one of Ty Jerome and Sam Merrill? And if so, who do you think stays and who do you think goes?
I think it depends on the Ty Jerome contract because it basically depends on how much money they're willing to give Ty Jerome. Because as we know, if the Cavs end up giving him the $14.3 million mid-level exception, that would trigger an $80 million luxury tax as well. So they would go a little bit further into the luxury tax. And then, obviously, they could offer Sam Merrill as much money as he wants, in theory, but it would be much more difficult after already making that purchase and going to get Ty Jerome. So I think if they can get Ty Jerome at a little bit of a discount, that would be great for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And it would be great for Sam Merrill, because even though he wouldn't be offered something more luxurious as, like, $6 to $10 million, he would still probably get the same kind of contract that he was on earlier on in his career, and talking about how that would be helpful for the Cavs as well in retaining both of those players that had big roles throughout the season. But obviously, I think there is a major importance, especially with Darius Garland being questionable for when he's going to come back in the beginning of the season, for the Cavs to bring back Ty Jerome. Or if they decide to go a different route and bring back Lonzo Ball, or get Lonzo Ball, excuse me, for Isaac Okoro in that trade that I mentioned earlier, that changes things, right? Because even though Lonzo isn't a score-first player as much as Ty Jerome is, he brings some of the same similar things and gets you a ball handler that helps you get Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland when he returns off the ball and into roles that they're more comfortable with. So I think it's very interesting to see what is going to happen and how things are going to pan out. But right now, Ty Jerome has the ball in his court, and he's able to look and see what other teams around the NBA, I believe there's 24 teams that can offer him the non-taxpayer mid-level exception. So it'll be interesting who offers him that much and whether the Cavs are willing to make that offer as well, because we know Ty Jerome likes it here. His best friend is in Cleveland, and he has a previous relationship with Donovan Mitchell. Plus, this is the team that gave him his breakout career or breakout season in his career. So I think it's important for him, all of those things. But if a team offers him the same amount of money and he gets a opportunity to start, I think that might be even more susceptible or even more intriguing for Ty Jerome.
I'll get you out of here with this, Ethan. As we talk about the impact of Kenny Atkinson's coaching and him just kind of, you know, thinking through some things and getting, you know, to figure some things out that maybe he didn't have time for last offseason. And he's got this player that they acquired at the trade deadline, DeAndre Hunter, who wasn't part of that equation last year. And then they had to kind of work in midseason. What does DeAndre Hunter's role look like, you think, next year? What does it look like next year compared to what it looked like this year, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I think you're trying to get him more involved in the offense without him having to feel like he's playing so iso-centric, right? And that was one of the best things about getting DeAndre Hunter. You got a guy that doesn't need the ball in his hands. He doesn't need a whole lot to get going or whatever. But the fact of the matter is, it felt like every time he touched the ball last year, he was on an island by himself. And he had the capability to go one-on-one with whoever was in front of him. But the Cavs' offense was so good because of the motion, because of the body and ball movement that happened. So I think Kenny Atkinson, one, is important to get him acclimated into the offense, but also finding ways to make him as comfortable as possible, and because they got him on this contract, so he'll be here for a while, except unless they trade him. So I think DeAndre is the second biggest piece to the summer for players for me, for the Cavs. It goes Evan Mobley, obviously, and DeAndre Hunter, because DeAndre has the capability to do, if the Cavs go away from Dean Wade, exactly what is needed. He's a 6'8", long wingspan, defensive-minded, has the foot speed to stay in front of some of these shifty guards as well, while also being able to guard stronger and bigger centers and all these things. So I think it's important for how DeAndre Hunter feels and gets acclimated this summer because of what his role could look like. You might see Kenny Atkinson try and use DeAndre as a half roller like he did with Isaac Okoro, right? You might have him trying to set ball screens and getting off the ball and setting pick and pops and all these different things. I just think the motion of the offense is what the Cavs did so well last year, and the importance of that cannot be lost, especially when we understand that they had one of the best offenses, not just in the regular season, but of the entire NBA history when we talk about this past 2024-2025 Cleveland Cavaliers team.